My name is Richard Hill, and by the power invested in me as WPKN's Public Affairs Director, I have decided to undertake the sacred and perilous mission to gain more exposure for the 42 talk public affairs and interview shows that air each month here on this station. In line with that goal, I will be interviewing, over the course of the next few months, some of the hosts in this pantheon of original programming, most of which is heard nowhere else on the airwaves. So tonight, we welcome Hazel Kahn, host of two interview shows, North Fork Works and Tidings. Hazel has lived in Pakistan, Israel, the UK, and Australia, where she received a PhD in psychology from the National University, before settling in the United States in the early 1970s, where she pursued a career in market research for 25 years. In the early 2000s, she decided to cash in her chips from the corporate world and move to the woods of Matatuck, Long Island, and soon became a radio host of two interview shows on WPKN, namely North Fork Works and Tidings, and we'll hear more about those in a moment. Welcome, Hazel Kahn. Thanks for being the first talk show host to help us explore some of the 42 talk, interview, and public affairs offerings that air each month on WPKN.
Thank you. I'm very, very happy that you're doing this, and I'm happy to be the first interviewee.
Indeed. Yeah. My pleasure to have you. Well, I do consider this important because we do have so many of these offerings, and they are sort of scattered around the roster at odd times. Some of them are only a half hour long. They may occur only once a month. They're sort of tucked into little niches that people have a hard time finding. So I think it's really good that we're trying to unearth some of these nuggets of gold that are part of our original programming. So Hazel, I love your programming, and I love talking to you as a guest and hearing your voice on the radio. Let's talk a little bit about the shows that you host. Why don't you just start with North Fork Works and take it from there?
North Fork Works is actually the first program that I started. And it is, as its name indicates, it's a very local show about the North Fork, which is where I live. And the North Fork is a small area on there's two forks in the North Fork. The east end of Long Island has two forks, the North Fork and the South Fork. I live on the North Fork. The South Fork is the rich people's Hamptons area. And the North Fork is a small farm. It used to be a Polish potato farmer community, but right now there's probably about 30,000 people live here year round. And so all of the interviews that I do are entirely based on people who live and work on the North Fork. So it's kind of hyper-local.
Very cool. And so give us a little taste of some of the interview topics that you present on that show.
Okay, I'll just give you a few, and I'll also tell you about the program I'm going to be that's going to be broadcast tomorrow on Wednesday. So there's a very wide range of things that I do. For example, I've done recently interviews with the Southold town. That's the town I live in, is Southold. Southold town historian speaking on the town's project, history of the town's enslaved people and their enslavers. Another local interview I did was with a man who used to be a chimney sweep and a science teacher, high school science teacher, who I came to know. And I first met him when he was whole and hale and hearty. But then in the process of doing a chimney sweep project, he fell from the roof of the house he was working on and he became a paraplegic. So I interviewed him at three different times, most recently about 4 years after he became a paraplegic. I've done many very environmental programs, such as talking to somebody at Cornell they have a big environmental program going here about kelp and seagrass, about restoring the habitat for the salt marsh sparrows. There's sort of very local things like that, very specific environmental things like that. And also the program that I'm going to be running tomorrow is with the town's environmental analyst talking about deer management, the overpopulation of white-tailed deer that we have here. The Governor Hochul of New York has just passed legislation to try and make it a bit easier for us to manage this overpopulation. And then we also do things like another local thing is that I've been doing is, for instance, a project to get householders to recycle their food into compost. It's a program that's run by a small group. But basically, those are the most recent. And I would be really pleased if people would listen to our deer management program tomorrow.
Just to pinpoint that, tomorrow is Wednesday. And the time of that show?
It runs twice. First at 6:30 a.m. and then it's repeated at 8 p.m. And it's a half-hour program.
And that show runs once a month, I believe.
Yeah, first Wednesday of the month.
First Wednesday of the month, 6:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. That is North Fork Works. Let's move over to Tidings, which I think is a charming pun, given that you are subject to the whims and exigencies of the Long Island Sound Tides.
Thought of that. Very clever of you.
I thought that you had thought of it, so that's why.
No, it's more. I think it's more my innate pessimism, which says I'm trying to bring you good tidings, but most of the time they're going to be depressing tidings.
Well, yes, well, we got to take the good with the depressing. So let's talk about that show and tell us what the parameters they're in.
It's just really things that I just don't know anybody else is covering. There are very often things I know absolutely nothing about. It's things that are, as I say, national and international. Again, I can give you some examples of, which I think will make the point, will describe the program, the whole program. Most recently, I interviewed a man who I've interviewed over the years, who is a Palestinian living in Toronto. He came to this country with his parents when he was young. And he created a business as a Palestinian advocate to import olive oil grown in Palestine by Palestinian farmers. So for 20 years or so, he's been doing this project, and I've bought his olive oil. I've interviewed him before. Everybody I know buys his olive oil. We give it to each other. And it's a very beautiful thing. And he just now has finally decided he just can't do it anymore, but because he's been doing it all by himself for 20 years. But he will be handing it over to somebody else. So the olive oil will continue to come into this country, into Canada, and somehow into America as well. I'm not sure of the the details. So that's one man. His name is Robert Samud, and the name of the olive oil is Zatoun, and it's just a beautiful program.
If I could ask a question about that, because I imagine, I think most of that olive oil is grown in the West Bank, and that area is under incredible stress now since October 7th, and I understand that there's a tremendous amount of settler violence that is targeting the olive groves of that area.
Yeah, we don't know. This is all very recent. So he would import this olive oil after the harvest every year, and enough for the following year. So it was just a one-time thing. So he himself will not be doing it now. The harvest is right now. So I don't know the details of what is possible and how much it's all been impacted. But what he told me, which was really interesting, he said that whereas olive oil throughout the Mediterranean, Greece, Italy, Spain, they're having tremendous issues with their trees. A lot of just diseases of olive trees in the Mediterranean because of their agricultural practices, which, you know, include a lot of pesticides and all those things. Whereas the olive trees in Palestine are left to grow as they grow naturally. So they are in much better shape. And also what's interesting is that there's no extra. They don't have any problems selling olive oil, Palestinian olive oil, in Israel, Palestine, and to the Arab surrounding Arab countries. They all use it. And there's such a demand for it that they never have to worry about having too much surplus. So it's a very easy market actually for the Palestinians, assuming, of course, that geopolitical factors are not prevailing. So as I say, I don't know whether I'll be doing another interview with him because he's really out of that business now. He's going doing other kinds of Palestinian advocacy with what he's learned in the last 20 years.
Yeah, and what he's probably been experiencing in the last 3 months, given the carpet bombing that's taking place in Gaza right now.
Yeah, well, he's in Toronto, but he said that once Gaza happened, he was so overwhelmed with orders. He sold something like 1,000 cases of olive oil in the first month. He ran out of it. He had nothing left. There was such a demand. It was in solidarity throughout, I guess, in North America, that he just sold out completely. He'd never done anything like that before. Just the support just suddenly arrived, you know.
Wow, that's amazing. So it sounds like Tidings, whereas Norfolk Works is a, as you say, hyper-local show, Tidings ranges farther afield to global issues.
Would you like me to talk to you a couple of other ones?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the Palestine department. I also interviewed recently a beautiful book about the partition, the Indian-Pakistan partition, written by a young Indian author. Her name is Anchal Malhotra. And she just wrote, she interviewed 17, I think, or 19 people about the object that they brought when partition came and they had to leave. They had to leave either India and go to Pakistan, what was then Pakistan, or they left Pakistan and went to India. So she just interviewed them, and the book has 19 photographs of the object that they carried. And it's just, it really becomes in the process of a wonderful history of partition, which took place in 1947. So that was an author. I've interviewed many authors, but that's the only one I'll talk about today. And then another much more national project that I've done also recently was I interviewed in the Veterans Administration gave me permission in Philadelphia to interview a chaplain and the psychologist of a project that they call the the project is called Moral Injury. And what this project is, it's taking vets, American vets who fought in whatever the wars were. Many of them are actually Vietnam vets, and it's basically getting them to. It's a 12-week program. They have little group sessions every month, every week for 12 weeks, every month for. I'm sorry, yeah, every week for 12 weeks, and they talk about their moral injury that they cannot unburden themselves from the war by being in war, and whatever each of them had their own story. But what's interesting about this is it's not just that. It's not just this returning soldier, now 40, 50 years, but also the community. So the moral injury is that the community takes on responsibility, saying we share the moral injury. We share it because we sent you to war. So that it's a whole ritual that they do online and in person. I was able to watch it online. But, you know, there was a chapel, they friends and family of these soldiers, of these veterans, talking and doing these ritual to, I guess, somehow share the moral injury that that was created as that was a consequence of being in war.
That's incredible. Tidings. Let's just talk about when that airs and when folks, you know, how can folks can access some of these past programs that you've done as well.
Yeah. Well, Tidings then will be the week after. So that'll be the I'm not sure what the date would be, the 14th, I think. Yeah, the 14th of February will be the next Tidings. I haven't talked about that yet because I'm still very much in the process of editing it. And I don't want to jinx it yet by saying it's going to be a program till I've successfully edited. It's a very difficult program with a woman who is a science teacher for children and also a poet in Michigan somewhere, and talking about Ivan Illich, among other things. Uh-huh. It's a very complicated, difficult edit. So that will be the week after, also at 6:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. and on the Wednesday, second Wednesday of the month.
Okay, so we have Norfolk Works on the first Wednesday of the month, Tidings on the second Wednesday mm-hmm. of the month. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's information to hang your hat on. If we could back up a bit and just talk about how and why you decided to involve yourself, well, first off, in doing this kind of interviewing, and secondly, to try to amplify it on the airwaves, specifically WPKN.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things. I wasn't born to do interview programs on WPKN. I did not know at all that this is what I was going to do. But in my career, when I came to the U.S., which was in the early 70s, with this PhD that I thought was more of a burden, actually, than an asset, especially it was a bad economic time, the early 70s. So I couldn't find a job, and I had never been in the business world. Nobody in my family had ever been in business and commerce. They were, you know, professionals, physicians and stuff like that. So I really was at a loss, but somebody hired me. And I think they hired me just because they thought that I had a PhD, but I had no skills, no experience whatsoever. So what happened was a small market research company that did interviews. So I just became an interviewer in a commercial, you know, for commercial clients. And then I did that for the next 25 years. That became my career. And I mean, I did other market research. I did surveys and all that kind of stuff. But so when I moved out to the North Fork, and I really didn't know what I was going to do. People said, oh, have you retired? Well, I never really thought I'd retire. I didn't know what that meant. But Tony Ernst, who is one of the people I hope you will also maybe be interviewing, because he has a very nice program called East End Inc. once a month, I think. So he found me somehow. We were protesting the Iraq war. And he found me and he said, why don't you just come and do interviews on WPKN? Somehow that's what happened. And so I just continued doing interviews that I'd done professionally with corporate and commercial interests. I started to do this. It was not planned. It was very rough and tumble when I started. I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never done any radio before. And it just became what I've been doing ever since, probably since about 2007 or 2008.
Wow, that's lovely trajectory there. I like the connection with Tony Ernst, well-known WPKN programmer. But just talk a little bit about your connection to this idea of interviewing, talking. How would you characterize what an interview is?
I think an interview is, I believe deeply, not so much interview in the end is a mechanism. What happens during an interview, I think of as an encounter between two people. It's usually easier when it's just two people. So two people encounter each other, and one person asks the questions and the other answers. And in that encounter is a very deep human event takes place. One speaks and is heard, and the other listens and hears. And in that encounter, a human, it's a very human thing that happens. And that is what is the gratification I get from doing these interviews, is I am party to that encounter. And it's always unknown, because even though I may have lots of questions I'm thinking I'm going to ask, it very rarely turns out that way, because these encounters are very dynamic. You never know what's going to happen, you know. And then, of course, the editing has to put it all into half an hour and make it into a story. But to me, it is the essence of what's going on that is that the person who's speaking, by being heard, is somehow he or she feels enhanced. They feel that just by being heard, they feel better in whatever way it may be. And it's different for each person. And the listener is just part of that process. And I just think that conversation is sort of the lifeblood of really a lot of radio, or can be a lot of radio. Not when you're just playing music, it's a whole different dynamic. But I am absolutely dedicated to the process. And so the process, of course, is the interview itself. And then there's all the technical stuff that takes that encounter and puts it onto the air. So there's two parts of it. And they have, again, very different gratifications.
Nicely said, Hazel. And, you know, it made me think that, I was listening to an interview, speaking of interviews, on YouTube the other day. And I was hearing, I think it was Trita Parsi, who's an Iranian scholar and commentator. He was saying, you know, talking about all this upsurge in violence that's happened in the Middle East, including in the United States, firing off multiple salvos at Yemen. Also, their revenge bombings of targets in Iraq and Syria over the killing of U.S. service people in Jordan. He was saying that this is heading toward a regional, if not world war, conflict, and that what is called for now is, more than anything else, diplomacy. And what is diplomacy but the very thing that you were talking about, conversation? People actually, you know, maybe not agreeing, but at least beginning to exchange ideas and doing that verbally, either face-to-face or through some kind of connection where they can hear each other and actually respond to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. I hope that something like that will prevent this thing from further escalation. It feels terribly dangerous to me.
Indeed. Diplomacy uber alles, so to speak. We need it more than ever. Well, Hazel, this has been a great pleasure for me. And thanks for kicking off our exploration of WPKN's Talk Public Affairs and Interview Programming, of which you are part of the flagship. And we'll look forward to having more conversations with you. I do want to mention, by the way, an interview I conducted with you about this fascinating book of yours called Growing Up Jewish in Pakistan. And if that's not a blockbuster headline right there, I don't know what is.
I mean, thank you for taking the initiative on this PKN. What are we calling it?
Our Talk Public Affairs and Interview Program.
Taking the initiative on bringing to the attention of people our public affairs. Really, really impressive offering.
Yeah, just last word on that. WPKN gets a lot of attention for its music programming. In fact, I think most people just think of WPKN as a music station. And a couple of years ago, there was an article in the New Yorker in which the header in that article was WPKN, the greatest radio station in the world or something. In that article, it mentioned deep and wide array of music programming. It did not mention any talk, public affairs or interview programs in that article. So it was that got me on this kick. I've been public affairs director for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, and decided to try to get some publicity for our Talk Public Affairs and Interview Programming, because it is, I guess you could say, unique. It's nonpareil. It doesn't occur anywhere else on the radio. So once again, thanks for being the first one to do this.
Hopefully this will be the beginning of something much bigger in terms of awareness and promotion of our Well, really, lots of good people doing really good work that is not getting the attention it should.
Couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much, Hazel Khan.
Thank you very much, Richard.
All right. Take good care.